Warning: The Mended Futures podcast contains stories told by guests that may be sensitive to some people. Viewer and listener discretion is advised. The opinions expressed by guests do not reflect the views of the hosts and/or producers of this podcast.
Taylor and I just recorded an epically long,
yeah,
but
in the best way,
epically awesome.
Yeah.
Episode.
Yes. So my friend Derek Landrineau joined us, and he is a producer on a project called The 100 Pages Movie. I am a writer on that movie, and Derek has also made his own documentary called From My Eyes. It's available on YouTube. And he's just, he brings so much heart to everything that he does, and he cares about people so deeply. And I'm excited for you to get to know him like we were able to in this episode.
And to hear how a creative is understanding the power of a collective vision.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We hope you enjoy. All right. So today we have Derek Landrineau. He is documentary filmmaker extraordinaire, producer of the 100 Pages podcast, and overall great friend.
That's wild. I gotta say, I never in my life did I expect to ever be introduced as a documentarian. But that's like, I think that is one thing that I am very, very, very good at. And so, but
yes.
I think we heard, who was this? I was at a summit this past weekend where my fiance was speaking about like business and leadership and stuff like that. And there was a speaker there that was like, there was a custodian at NASA that got asked, what do you do for a living? And he said, I work to put men on the moon.
Yes.
And he was like, and I love that. It wasn't, I'm a custodian at NASA. It's, I work to put humans on the moon. I think that was the answer as well. But, so Natalie and I have been talking about, what do we want to say outside of like her saying, I work in the tech industry or mm-hmm. like whatever. So I'm trying a new thing. So I'll test it out here. My name's Derek Landrineau. And I attempt to make things that leave audiences better than they were before they came. That's my goal. So
amazing.
That's the first time I've said that out loud.
Well, you did great.
Yes.
You can use that however you want. Remix it, whatever.
Oh, we are.
We'll make it into a song.
Yes.
It'll be awesome.
I feel like he's going to update his LinkedIn during this or right after, and mm-hmm. it's going to say documentarian.
Oh, no. I think it'll always, I love what my bio on Instagram says. It says, Derek Landrineau, let me begin with, I am not perfect. I am also a director and experienced life filmer.
There
and then
you
that's
go.
It. Engaged to Natalie Locke.
You got to have that on there.
Very important.
Wear it proudly.
Yeah.
So I have no context. Tell us about From My Eyes.
So From My Eyes is the first actual feature that I ever made. It was always a movie. Whenever I, about 5 years in, everybody was calling it a vlog, but it was never a vlog. It was always a movie. And so basically in October 2012, I picked up a camera and pressed record on my life every day, anywhere from 2 to 8 hours a day for over 3,000 days straight. So 10,000 plus hours of footage that my best friend Zach Trammell and I got to go through from mid 2020 through 2022. And we finished the film in 2022, attempted to distribute it and wound up releasing it for free on YouTube. And now it's on Tubi.
Cool, I didn't know that.
Yeah, dude. And so God willing, it'll continue to grow. But ultimately, I want our team to make money. But I know our goal overall was just for the most eyes as possible to get on it. So that ultimately came down to releasing it for free. So but the story is of a young college student with the dreams of becoming a director. And along his way, he learns how to live a life worth filming.
Oh, wow. So In 2012, how old were you?
I was 18. I was 18 at the time, and I picked up a Sony Handycam that's shot 1080p HD. Nice. And it's cool as you watch the movie and as Derek's perspective of the world gets clearer, the footage gets better. And so we went from 1080 HD to 4K by the end of it. And then the 100 pages doc started in 4K and we're at 4K 10-bit. And I think we'll maybe be in 6K or 8K by the end of it.
Oh my God.
And to someone that doesn't know anything about what you just said, break that down to people who don't live in the tech world.
For sure. Trust me, a lot of it sounds like gibberish to me still as well. I'm anything but a gearhead, but I know the overarching levels. And so everything I just said comes down to like image quality. So basically, you could say whenever there's a K after it, the higher the number, the better the image quality. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so
for folks listening, it would be like audio going from a record to something digital. So you were filming for a long enough time that you also got to see the changes in technology.
Yes, 100%. So 10 years of technology. I mean, I started with an iPhone 4 and ended with an iPhone 11 or 13.
There you go.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So yeah. Yeah.
So when you first picked up the camera, did you know what you were making?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. No, it was always, I remember on October 9th, 2012, I was on my way to math class and basically I had saved the past year and a half I'm putting on Do Not Disturb. Basically I had saved the past year and a half for my first camera. And whenever I got the money for it, I wanted to be famous on YouTube. And mm-hmm. so I had a bunch of ideas on what to film. Once I got the camera, the ideas just stopped and I had no idea what to do. And I was like, God, just give me something, whatever you tell me. Like I will go after whatever it is. Just tell me what you want me to do. And I can take you to the exact spot. This still small voice just touched my spirit. And it was a question. Why don't you film college? And I was like, yeah, right. Like this was back in 2012. Vlogging was not even on anyone's radar. And so the idea of walking around daily with a camera in my hand, it was like everyone was looking like, what are you doing? And then I just started telling people I'm filming a movie. And so I knew I was filming a movie about college and I definitely had I knew there was a story. We just didn't know what it was yet. And so I had to dive into it like anybody on their own hero's journey and take what life throws at you and figure out what lessons God wants you to learn along the way.
Hmm. I feel like I know the answer to this next question because I've watched the film. But how did you know when it was time to stop filming and start editing?
Oh, dude. I think there was a clear like climax of the story and an endpoint that hit. And I don't want I mean it's been out for a year so spoiler alert or whatever, but I think around the time my mom passed away, mm-hmm. I knew that it was coming to a close. I knew it hadn't finished yet. And as a couple of months went by after my mom passed, I started realizing, oh, how the movie ends is I have to make the movie. And so it was a very meta type ending. And so the last 20 minutes of the film is Derek documenting his process of making the film and the lessons learned from looking back over the past 10 years of footage and seeing who he was at the beginning versus who he is now. And that the moments that he thought were super, super important in the editing process, looking back, he realized that it was the moments he overlooked that were the ones that were worth filming and the most worth filming.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. And I think so many of us experience that in whatever season of life that they're in. You know, whatever you think was the big thing it probably wasn't.
Yeah.
The little things are the big things.
Yeah.
Definitely. The big things usually turn out to be montages. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing wrong with a montage, but too many of them get old. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, like it's definitely, mm-hmm. you're so right.
Yeah. So when you're in the editing process, you said you had over 10,000 hours of footage, and you kind of just mentioned the things that you didn't expect to stick out to you, stuck out to you. What would be some examples of things that in your personal, through your own eyes, memory, you thought would be the best for the documentary that didn't really end up making it? And then vice versa, what did you not think would make it and ended up being the story?
Oh yeah, dude. I think one thing in particular was like all of the famous people we had in the movie. I was like, dude, people are going to want to come see these famous people. Like, heck yeah, we're going to be able to get money to make this movie and I won't have to go through all the footage and make this movie and it'll be great. So like for years, let's see, from 2017 to 2019. So for about 2 years, we tried to just milk that as much as possible and make it seem as cool as it could be. But mm-hmm. in reality, we had like one of the original log lines for the movie was just like, it included like getting to see like the behind the scenes rise of social media and stuff like that. And yes, that's huge. But in reality, like the story's about a boy and his mom and becoming a man. Mm-hmm. And so like, and you know, the things that life throws at you to mold you into the man or woman that God, you know, created you to be so you can be the change that he wants to see in the world. And I used to think like, you know, all of the touring with MagCon and all the biggest social influencers in the world and like the beginning of Shawn Mendes's career and mm-hmm. like all of that stuff, getting to capture that. Like, yes, these are big, like, oh, whoa, you got what? But in reality, it's like when you go and sit down and watch the movie, the biggest note that I would get through every watch through was like, there's way too much MagCon, like there's way too much this or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so like, the original cut of the project was 2 hours and 20 minutes.
Whoa.
And Garrett Warren, my mentor, he's an absolute general and he just had the foresight and the favor on Zach and I to be able to sit in our sandbox with us throughout the post-production process and watch the film multiple times and just tear it apart for us.
There you go.
And always get it back to like, what's the core of this project? And he taught us so much. He taught us so much. I can't thank Garrett enough, as well as Greg Furman, and many other people that were on our team. That list goes on and on. And so, so yeah.
So I'm thinking, as someone who was not familiar with the project, what you didn't think it was going to turn into, the coming of age story, that's a tale as old as time. And still, that's what we want to listen to. And that's what we want to watch. And it really goes back to 518 Family Services right now, when we're talking about our community or your community or the village. We really want people to realize that ordinary people, everyday people, do pretty extraordinary things. And you may not know that it's extraordinary when you're doing it. So just hearing you reflect back on a project that is blood, sweat, and tears and is highly personal to you, people love the highly personal of everyday people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I think because it's real.
Mm-hmm.
People want real, even whenever it comes to fiction movies, like the things that we connect with in the greatest fiction movies of all time are the real relatable moments, or else it's just like chaos. Mm-hmm. You know, and so So yeah, no, I totally agree. And you're sitting next to an epic woman, Taylor Melvin, who it takes leaps like this, and coming out to be a part of our 100 Pages project has been like very real. And on this project, we get to capture 100 different people's very real stories, all coming together to create one film and one story. And so, yeah, but you're so right. You're so right.
We filmed with a guest earlier this morning, and we were kind of talking about the struggles of living in a digital social media driven world. You know, which things are more appropriate to keep between you and God, which things are appropriate to share. And I feel like you definitely lean on the side of what do you mean appropriate to share? Like, it's all, I'm open, whatever, you know?
yeah.
But I admire you because you are someone who is able to film an authentic life. And I think that is deeply, deeply rare. So how do you balance having a camera and not letting that impact your like metacognition, if that makes sense?
So like a highlight reel is what we typically see from people's social media. How did you not fall into that trap, or did you, and learn from it?
Definitely. I went on every roller coaster. Thank God I didn't, you know, mess it up entirely. I'm still trying to process the word metacognition. What does that even mean?
Essentially thinking about thinking. So like,
oh, okay.
Yes. So for example, when I am not a digital person, like I don't live in the digital world naturally, right? I'm a writer. I like pen and paper.
Yes.
So for me, when I go into something with the intent of filming it, it's hard to be fully present because I'm not fully thinking about what I'm living, but what I'm filming.
Yeah, I think, and I love that, dude. And I'm about to blow your mind. Are you ready? My sister told me this once because I used to tell her, oh, I got to film more. Like there's not a story yet. Like all of this stuff. And she's like, Derek, whenever I pull my journal out and I start to write, I write like nobody's ever, ever, ever going to read it.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, so maybe film like no one's ever, ever going to watch this. And I was like, okay. And so ultimately the moments that you see, sorry,
you're good.
The moments that you see in the film, there are so many of those moments that like I filmed and like nobody was ever going to watch it. And then whenever I had to watch it, I hated watching it. Mm-hmm. I hated that so much. And I think so much of like sharing things that are actually important. Quentin Tarantino talks about this. And he's like, write movies to the point that you're actually like very self-conscious about sharing this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then just put it out there. Like I think one of the things I've learned how to do, which comes with a lot of responsibility, and that it's God's grace that I haven't messed this up more and more and all of that. I've learned lessons through it, but people trust the camera as much as they trust the person holding it. And so whenever it comes to documenting life, you're not just documenting your life. You're not just sharing stuff about your life. You're sharing your life as well as those around you. And so it comes with a huge responsibility. And so whenever you're watching from my eyes, like there's a whole other like world of behind the scenes that like every single person in that film, I had to call and ask them to sign a release to be in this film after the movie was made.
Mm-hmm.
And so we didn't get releases throughout the film. We got them after. And that says a lot about the mindset that we went into post-production with, which was we're going to honor everybody in this film. Like, and this is not a hit piece on anybody. And so I think, like, ultimately, whenever you're sharing your life, it comes down to, like, what's your intention, and making sure that those intentions are pure. And ultimately, that all comes down to the creator's heart. And so before I moved to LA, my sister, you'll see this in the film. This conversation isn't in the film because there wasn't enough time, which sucks. her and I were in a very heated time in our family, but she had enough foresight to calmly sit down with me and ask me, Derek, why are you moving to LA? And I told her, I was like, because I want to bring God back to Hollywood. I want to bring God's love back to Hollywood. And she's or to Hollywood. And she said, OK, so you want to be like a missionary? I said, yeah, sure. And she said, OK, Derek, what's the most important job of the missionary? And I said, well, duh, to win souls to Christ. Duh, sis. And she's like, nope. And I'm like, what are you talking about? That is the most important thing. She said, nope. And I was like, all right, what's the most important job of the missionary? And what I'm about to tell you goes crosses every line in the world. It's not just religious. It's not just spiritual, all of this stuff. Like, it is universal information. So the most important job of the missionary is the missionary's heart. The most important job of the creator is the creator's heart, because out of your heart, out of the missionary's heart, out of the creator's heart is what they talk about, what they do, what they create, how they share the gospel, how they share love with people. And so the most important job we have and I have as a creator is making sure my heart is right with God, myself, my heart is right with God, so that I can truly do what I've set out to do, which is ultimately I want to love people like God's loved me. I want to bring joy to people like God's brought so much joy to me, while encouraging creativity and making excellence easy, while getting to create daily with my best friends. And I can do that as a filmmaker. I can do that as a coffee barista. I can do that in an office job. I can do that as a parent. Like, I can, if I can check those boxes, it all comes back to my heart. But I'm the richest dude on planet Earth whenever I get to do that. And so, yeah, there's my ramble. I hope that answers your question. I'm so sorry.
Do not apologize for that answer. Are you kidding? I love it. Your mission statement is set in stone. It's amazing.
Those are your core values.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Hey friends, let's talk about real impact. Imagine a single mom struggling to keep her family together, or a child sleeping on the floor because they don't have a bed. Now imagine you being able to meet that need. That's exactly what happens every day through Care Portal.
Care Portal is a platform that connects real-time needs from local children and families to people like you, churches and individuals who want to make a difference. With just a few clicks, you can step in, meet a need, and build a meaningful connection that changes lives.
This isn't just charity. It's the church and the community coming together, showing up in love and action. So if you're ready to turn compassion into action, visit careportal.org and see how you can be a part of the movement, because connection changes everything.
Visit careportal.org for more information on how to sign up and start meeting the needs of children and families in your own zip code. Once again, that's careportal.org.
Thank you, Care Portal, for sponsoring the Mended Futures podcast.
So should we talk about 100 pages?
Heck yeah, dude. Let's do it.
For someone who has never heard of the 100 pages movie, who might be listening to this, give them the pitch.
So, in short, our log line is, or our synopsis is, we found 100 people from all over the world and got each of them to write a single page of a cohesive screenplay over the course of 100 days. And we told them, whatever movie you guys write, we're making it in Tennessee. And so we started, Marcus Johns came up with this idea. I just finished From My Eyes, and I was in Tennessee finishing up some final mixing for the film, and I met up with Marcus at Mojo's Tacos, and nice. We were just jamming about different ideas. And I asked him, I was like, dude, what's the, I'm trying to figure out what my next project is. I'm terrified that nothing will ever mean nearly as much to me as From My Eyes did. And I was like, and so I'm looking for my free solo. Like Marcus, what's that free solo idea that you've been dreaming about? And he's like, he thought for a second, and he was like, dude, I got this crazy idea. Like, what if we got 100 people to write a movie and then we made it? And I'm getting chills again, dude. And I'm like, I'm telling you, like, my soundboard, my light board just lit up. And all my qualifier for a great idea is always how many ideas does it like spur on? Like, how many ideas does it birth as a result? And dude, my mind just went crazy. And I was just like, I could see it so clearly. For the past 5 years or six years, I've casted reality TV in the background. So I knew how to find people. Hmm. I knew how we could do it. And then I was like, dude, let's do this. And he was like, he hadn't seen From My Eyes yet. And so I was like, bro, I'm on it. Like, let's do this. And he's like, okay, let's think about this a little bit.
Marcus was saying, let's think about it.
Yes, 100%.
That's wild.
Oh yeah, dude. And so I was like, okay, hey, watch From My Eyes. This is the role that I would want to play on this. And this was a huge ask as well. And I was like, but I can't, I need to partner with you on this. I can't just work for you. Like, I have to partner with you on this. And he's like, okay, I'll watch the film and I'll get back to you. Watch the film that night. He called me. He was like, all right, we're doing it. And I was like, great. He's like, I see it. I see what we can do. Let's make it happen. Yeah. And so I was like, all right, let's start tomorrow. He's like, wait, let's wait a month and let's circle back. I'm going to talk with my wife, with Kristen, and just kind of start planting this idea, and we'll see how that goes. So I went and filmed at a church camp in Colorado for a month. And then I came back and I was like, so are we doing it? And I was at Christian's house. And so we brought on our film director, Christian Del Grosso. And once Christian was on, I was like, I know one more person that, like, I know can make this happen. They were like, okay. And so I called Jesse Dueck, and we met at the Griffith Observatory, park in LA.
That's awesome.
And I pitched him the idea, and he was like, oh my gosh, let's do it.
Aww.
And so since then we found 100 different people. Taylor is one of them as well. One of the 100.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember your page number?
67.
Yep. So Taylor Melvin is page 67. So the process went like this. So Taylor had access to pages 1 through 65 until her writing day. So she was reading the script for 65 days as it was being written. Each day a new page was posted. And then our writers got to that hadn't written. Got to read those pages. Then on the morning of day 65, we would hand Taylor page 66. We would read it together, talk about ideas, and then we would send her off. She would write the next page of her movie. Then we would work together to fix certain plot holes, different things like that, really make sure that the page was 100% sound. And then we would take her page and kick her out. And we had a special chat for every writer that had already written. They couldn't talk about the movie at all. And Taylor couldn't see what happened next in the film until the table read, which was on February 10th, 2024.
Yeah, almost a year, which is crazy.
I know, dude. Yeah, that is wild. That is wild. Yeah. So
that's beyond creative.
Oh, yeah, it was huge. And I think if we had waited any longer, we would have never have done it because literally 9 months later, the week after the table read,
yep,
Marcus and Kristen had their second child.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm refraining from jokes. I'm censoring myself. And so, but the idea moved forward and it was wonderful. And then young Amelia, sweet, sweet Amelia was born. And, but it was really cool because it was right around the time that the idea was conceived that, yeah. that it felt like she kind of became the project child.
Mm-hmm. She's so, our mascot.
So, yeah. So I look at Amelia as like, for however old she is including the 9 months she was in the mm-hmm, womb mm-hmm. Is how old the project is,
the living so, timeline. That's awesome.
Yeah, living timeline.
And I so, have that it, I have that baby in my house. She's the aww. She's the dissertation baby. So when wow. I think of, and it almost gives you like an end date, or it gives you a timeline that you really needed to meet that.
Yeah, yeah. And through this project I met my fiance, Natalie, and not one of our writers, mm-hmm. thank God.
Is that a bad thing?
Huh?
Is that a bad thing?
Would it have been a bad thing?
In the Hollywood climate currently, it probably wouldn't be smiled upon fully, but it would have made things very stressful for a couple of months, but thank God it's good. So
okay, there you go.
So yeah, but she's wonderful. She's my best friend and yeah, dude, I can't wait to marry her. We set a date yesterday or the
you
day
did?
Before.
Is it secret?
Yeah, dude.
Congrats.
So, thank you so much. Thank you. So we're still figuring it all out, but that venue and date have been set, which is great.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Gosh.
Any what else would you like to know about 100 pages? Because I'm almost an open book.
Okay. Yeah, almost. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I was going to say the whole sentiment of if we didn't do it when we did it, it probably would have never happened. I had that same frame of mind going into like putting in my application for the project, because I saw like they put a reel on Instagram. They're like, we're looking for 100 writers to each write one page of a movie script. And I was like, there's just not enough reason for me to not.
And who's try? Ever going to ask that question again?
Exactly. I was like, yeah, I'm going to apply. And then I'm like, I'm not a late night worker. I know a lot of people in the creative space are like, I was working through the night. I was working till 5 a.m. Hey, girl, I can't do that. I'm not I am not that person. So I saw the reel around like 11 p.m. and I was like, If I close my phone before I finish this application and turn it in, I'm going to convince myself not to do it. So I was like, let's just do it. I like turned on the one light in my bedroom. I was like, yeah, so I think this is what I could contribute. And like just the grainiest video. But
Taylor, did you talk about you enjoy creating characters? Was that you?
Yes.
Yeah. And talking about if Michael Scott had a daughter.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Dude, that's yeah. I remember watching that with Marcus and all of them. And we were all like, yep, she gets it. Like,
oh, yes. And,
so yeah, you had dude. To and audition to write.
It was like a video interview.
That's neat.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they in their application, how long did it take you to fill out the full application? Including writing that page of the script.
Well, the page was probably the worst thing I'd ever written. So total, it took me about 30 to 40 minutes.
Epic. So, but even that is a huge time commitment for an application. Mm-hmm. And that is why we made it that way. That's why I really pushed for it to be that way. It was really, really difficult pushing through the application that I knew we had to do. Because the guys were like, dude, if you put too much, people aren't going to sign it. And I was like, dude, if people don't fill out the application, then they're definitely not showing up in Nashville.
Right.
So like there were these prerequisites that we strategically put in place for everybody who was actually bought into this project. And so many views on that link, so many looks at it, but that number drastically went down whenever it came to how much of the application was filled in. And so but yeah, dude, they made a video that was basically like, we had, I think it was like 3 to 5 questions for mm-hmm. them to answer. because we wanted to see their face, needed to make sure it was they were real. and then we had Lauren Schatz do it with a freaking a face filter the whole time.
Really? So, oh my yeah, god!
So there were some people we had to reach back out to and ask for a better video, but then it was a long questionnaire from where are you from to what's your favorite movie, stuff like that, and then there was I found a single page from a shizzy Hallmark movie and we put it up there and we said, read this page and write what you think the next page could be. So we let them kind of start playing the game with a Hallmark movie. And so everybody wrote out their page. And then from that, we got to see not only if they were creative, but also how much script writing experience they had. And so we had people submit in perfect condition with not the best ideas to really great ideas, all the way to literally the antithesis of a script format with not great ideas. But our qualifier was, and some of them weren't the script format, but they were great ideas. That's not what we were looking for the most, though, was, do you get the project? Do you want to be involved? Will you show up on October 8th? I think it was October 8th. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Will you show up on October 8th? And do you want to learn as well? And mm-hmm. The skill range of writers that we had on this project varied from never written a day in their life to written for the past 60 years. And so Miss Donna Barlett was our oldest writer, 89 years old. And so, yeah. And then our youngest writer was 13 years old. Mm-hmm. And so we just had the full spectrum and naturally diverse cast, which is my favorite way of doing it. Because we're not trying to check boxes. Those boxes just get checked organically. And that's aces for me. And it was really, really wonderful. But our collective goal is that we want to create the Hollywood that we all dreamed about in high school. And we want to at the very least show the future creators of the world that it is possible to do things differently. It takes a lot of work. Mm-hmm. And there's no promise that you'll succeed to the world standards, but of success whenever it comes to a film or an art piece or whatever. But if you can clearly define your version of success at the beginning of a project, if you work hard enough, you will succeed at those things, or at least succeed in learning a lesson that can put you in a great place to attempt it again down the road if you want to. But I want young creators to watch this project, this documentary series, this film, and be able to be like, oh, okay, it is possible. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, they literally chose arguably one of the most difficult ways to make a movie in film history, and then they did it. And none of this would be possible without the collective. None of this would be possible without God. There have been so many very clear and tangible things that have happened in this project that just aren't explainable other than that just a divine intervention. But there's a scene in Moneyball with Brad Pitt and Jonah Hill. Basically, I'll improv the first part, but I've got the final line here. And he says so they had just won 19 games in a row, which had never been done in MLB history, the Oakland A's. And Brad Pitt's looking at Billy Bean. He's looking at his executive assistant assistant GM played by Jonah Hill. And he says, Jonah Hill's wondering, why aren't you excited? Like, we just won 19 games. And he's like, dude, I've done this before. I know this game. I know the people in this game. If we get all the way to the World Series and we don't win, like, they'll mm-hmm. forget us. They'll write us off. Like, this isn't about rings. This isn't about that. That's how people get hurt. And then he says, but if we get there and we win this with this team, with this budget, with how we're doing this, if we pull this off, we will have changed the game. Like, and that is what this is. He's like, that's what I want. We will have changed the game. But Marcus loves seeing a huge problem, and finding a solution. Mm-hmm. And I believe that's what Christian and Jesse and Marcus and I have in common, is that we love seeing these audacious opportunities. And if it can do something good, if it can create something that's never been made before, and if it can do it in a way that's exciting, then you've got our vote for yes. Like, let's make it happen. And so we want to change the game. We want to change the game, and we want to create the Hollywood we all dreamed about in high school. Because when we got there, and worked in it for 10 years, it was not what we wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And so, I think the future of the film industry and creating is in the hands of the creators. And cause you can find money, you can find support, you can find a platform, to put content out, even if it's on YouTube. Like, distribution has never been easier. It's also arguably never been harder as well. And mm-hmm. so, but it's a new world, and it's a new, how do I say it? Like, and if people, it's just a new game. And mm-hmm. there's another line in Moneyball. Moneyball is such a great movie, and it is the thesis of 100 pages. Mm-hmm. And it's, like, people are going to look at this project one day and they'll be like, okay, if people aren't doing it the way that you guys did it moving forward, then they're dinosaurs. Like, this project is going to turn heads. It's going to change lives. It's going to bless audiences, and it's going to show people that, like, doing the impossible is possible. But you can't do it alone. And mm-hmm. so, yeah. And I'm freaking amped, dude. I can't wait.
So Taylor knows that, going back to metacognitive, I'm typically, as I'm listening to you talk about Moneyball, which my mama loves that movie. So I've watched it, and we have talked about it, and I'm married into a baseball family. So as I'm listening to you talk about it, I get chills thinking about how this can relate to other settings. This is generalizable. So I think what you and your colleagues are doing, you're pioneering, you're disrupting, you're challenging the status quo. You are not sure what the outcome is going to be, you know, and a lot of it may be failing forward. You know, we've got to make sure that we don't think failure is bad. But a lot of what you're doing, talking about film writing, screenwriting, filmmaking, applies to work that can be done in the community. You know, we're talking to everyday people. You're not an everyday person, by the way, but we're talking to everyday people who have a place along the river, have a place in the village to make an impact on this generation and future generations. So what you're describing here, you know, there's a whole model out of Stanford about the importance of collective impact. What you're describing here could be generalizable for so many work settings or so many processes. So 100%. I loved hearing you talk about that, because what if something in a nonprofit setting, a church setting, a family setting, works well, but maybe it's not working well enough. Maybe it's not collaborative. Maybe it's a game. Maybe it's political. What if it's not working and the creative idea changes the game? We have to be brave enough, or we have to be open enough to at least try it.
Oh, definitely. And I got to say this as well. Like two things. One, I promise you I am an everyday person. My goodness. I am. Watch from my eyes and you will be like, oh, okay, this guy. Yeah, he's a goofball. Yeah, I am the I just want to say that I very much am an everyday person. Because I don't want anybody to ever look at me and say, oh, I can't do that.
Yep.
That's why I'm saying that. Mm-hmm. Anybody can do audacious things. Like anybody can push themselves to the limit and do different things. Maybe you're not the documentarian and it doesn't make sense for you to pick up a camera and film it. But if you have that desire on your heart and like in a big idea, you can do it. Mm-hmm. Like if it's to go and get a degree that is audacious and go create a cure to some unknown disease before it's ever even made, like whatever, do that. Like you can do that. If it's I want to go work and clean buildings to be able to encourage people to push their boundaries to go to the moon, like you can do that. And that is so daggum honorable. It's unbelievable. And all of that to say, I believe there are these certain desires that God puts on all of our hearts from a young age that somewhere along the way, either it's because of some traumatic situation that knocked you off your feet, you've lost it, or you've just denied it for so long to where it just got quieter and quieter you always have a choice and you can succeed. Like people survived the Holocaust. People survived and there's a what's his name? Something Frederick not Frederick Douglass. Finkel, daggummit. That sucks. Victor Frankl.
Oh, you were close.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Incredible man. Mm-hmm. Went around and whispered in the ears of men and women and kids in concentration camps that there's hope. Mm-hmm. Like, there's hope. There's meaning to this. Like, and they would beat the shiz out of this guy. Mm-hmm. And he'd get up again. There's hope. There's meaning. There's meaning in this. We're going to make it. Like there are people like that, and there's reason for these things and for these seasons that we're going through, and you can be used in all of that. All of that to say, like, yes, the collective, you say, Derek, your colleagues, you guys are doing something. Taylor's my colleague. Mm-hmm. Taylor is an equity owning part of the 100 Pages project. She has ownership in this project, and all of that to say, like I think a huge part of it is no matter where you're at, and I hope that we get to run all of our projects similar to this one, because there is a business side that we're learning, but there's a way to do good business. Mm-hmm. And we want to find that, and we want to do that incredibly, like so good. This huge desire of my heart, man, and it's so complicated and wild, but we're
not
getting there.
Easy.
Okay,
it's really not.
So I want to say,
oh, but can I finish real
yes.
quick? All I was going to say is like whenever you have a team that has ownership in the direction that everyone's heading, like that has ownership in that final product, like it does make it a lot easier to make it through, because you're not alone and you have people that are ready to. That are ready to, like Dan Morin drove mm-hmm. across the country, drove 16 hours a couple of weeks ago to come and live with me in this barn.
Really?
To work on this project. Not because we asked him, but he reached out and he was like, hey, I think it would be better if I came in for the week and helped you guys with this.
That's awesome.
It's easier than doing all this stuff on Zoom. Dude drove in, paid for all of it. Like,
he's
like,
the best.
That's,
I love him.
Yeah, dude, Dan's epic. Mm-hmm. We had 17 other riders go over and above Rebby Jordan and both of their teams, like coming back to work on the script a little bit more mm-hmm. to sand out some rough edges. And ultimately, please remind me your name. I'm so sorry.
Allison.
And ultimately, Allison, like you, whenever people have ownership in that collective, that's whenever great things happen, in my opinion. In my opinion. So
that's when the next level transformative work happens. So Taylor probably knows. I screamed in the last
interview. Giggled out of joy.
Yes. And I'm over here. I'm over here right now. Like, as I'm listening to you, I was thinking, he's a hope dealer. You know, that so many things in our community, so many things we lack the ability to see hope. And you're talking around this concept of hope, and then you said it. So I got chills when you mentioned hope. So there is hope, and there is hope that there could be a different model. We could work differently. It's also this concept of we always think about, or we get an analysis paralysis of, what if it didn't work? Well, what if it does? You know, every time somebody invents something 100 times before it didn't work, but when it does, what if it is the cure? One time it's going to be the cure. And then I immediately thought about the book Rooting for Rivals. Have you heard of the concept in the book? So Peter Greer wrote a book called Rooting for Rivals, and it is a kingdom-minded concept that you should be so radically collaborative that you root for, join up with your rivals, and that's what your model is. These are rival writers. These are rivals that you are competing with in the traditional model, and you all are so wildly collaborative right now. And one of my favorite things about this model is, if you are rooting for rivals, oftentimes the money, the finances, the compensation will actually be more than they would have been if you were trying to do things individually. So even if this is not included in the book, you absolutely need to read or listen to. He reads it in Audible. You need to either read or listen to Rooting for Rivals, because it is revolutionary. It's the first time I saw in writing what I felt in my heart about collaboration.
That. I love that. I just pulled it up in another tab, and I'm gonna figure out how I'm gonna consume that in the next day. Hopefully, by a smoothie, and so smoothie form.
Just blend it right up.
Oh yeah, no, but that's amazing, and I totally agree. I think one of my favorite parts of this project so far has been some of the local production companies that we've met with and local studios. Even whenever the project hasn't aligned with what they're working on, they have connected us with other people that this project can align with. Mm-hmm. And we went through multiple huge studios to get to where to the studio that we're currently pursuing a collaboration with. And it's really cool, specifically this community in Nashville. And I really, really hope that we do a great job of protecting that culture. But they root for rivals. It reminds me of this epic movie called Joy with Jennifer Lawrence.
Great movie.
Yes, there is a part at the end where Bradley Cooper and Jennifer Lawrence are sitting in across from each other, and he reminds her of this moment earlier in the movie where he says, "Hey, like right now we are friends in business, but at some point we will be adversaries in business, and I hope we can remain friends." Mm-hmm. And at the end of the movie, they are adversaries in business. They are two competing companies working against each other, but they sit down as friends. And he shares inside information with her and stuff, just little things, to let her know, like, hey, like you're winning, like this is going to work, and ultimately you're going to buy us out, and then we'll be working together again. But like, it's just a really cool moment in our careers right now where we're actually seeing that happening, and it's been very, very exciting. It's been very exciting, and I hope that culture continues, and that money changes things and changes people. And I think it was Abraham Lincoln that said this. It was like, if you want to know the true measure of a man, or like the true character of a man, give them money, give them power.
So we're going to stop there for this episode. We're actually going to make it a two-parter because Derek, in the wealth of experience and stories that he has to share, we couldn't possibly fit it into just 1 week. So this week was more about 100 pages and From My Eyes. And next week, you'll be able to hear more about his personal story with losing his mom and developing a community beyond his blood family, and including his blood family.
Yes. So make sure you come back.
Thank you for listening to the Mended Futures podcast, hosted by Allison Jordan and Taylor Melvin, produced by Liam Chafin, Sue England, Allison Jordan, Robert Day, Sully Jugar, and Taylor Melvin. You can find us on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to like, share, and subscribe to see more.